If you're picking up the phone today, know this before you do that. We are not here to shame anybody. We're not here to embarrass anybody. This isn't about giving anyone a guilt trip. It's about talking our way into what can be a crippling problem in the lives of so many people. So that number again, 03030 80 55 55. You can text part of your story or a question for our guest to 81771. And I see you're already tweeting at BBC Talkback. Owen O'Neill is the Public Health Agency's lead on alcohol and drugs. He's in the Talkback studio with me, along with Pat, who's from the Belfast office of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Hugh Jordan, the journalist Hugh Jordan, good friend of the programme. We've had him on the programme many years now. Well, he's been on this programme longer than I have, as a matter of fact, over the years. But 9 years ago, it is now, Hugh, you decided, that's it, no more alcohol in my life. Why did you do that?
Like many things, William, I just kind of stumbled into giving up drink. I had been thinking about it over the years, but there's a difference between thinking about it and actually doing it. And it was as simple as this. As you know, I mean, make no secret of it, I'm a fan of Glasgow Celtic. And I was my life gradually increased my intake of alcohol, and Friday was a big day for me. But a friend of mine rang me, a well-off friend of mine, rang me from Spain, and he said, could you get tickets for Celtic and Rangers? It was a big match coming up, and if Celtic had won, it would change the Scottish League. And he said, I said, yeah, I can get tickets. He said, well, if you can get that, we'll go in my helicopter. And I'd never been in a helicopter before. So we flew to Glasgow. Celtic beat Rangers, and after it, we celebrated big time. But the following day, I suffered badly, and I never went out the house. And I said to myself that day, I'm going to have to try and do something about this.
With someone else on the line who's going to remain anonymous, that's absolutely fine. No problem with that at all, who texted into the programme today. Good afternoon. Welcome to Talkback.
Hello.
Tell us a bit about your story.
Right. We've been married for 30 years, and my husband is a very heavy drinker. Now, having said that, I do drink a bit myself. We were both in the services. So he is suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. I know that for a fact. But the thing is, it's affecting my life so badly now. He drinks every night of the week at least half a litre bottle of spirits. And when he gets drunk, he becomes really, really nasty to me. It's like I feel I'm living with a monster every night of the week. It's very, very horrible. Eventually falls asleep, but that's my life every night of the week. And then at the weekend there, he became really, really, really aggressive and angry. And it was getting very physical. And I actually had to telephone the police. And the police took him away and let him out the next day because I didn't want it to go any further. But ever since that, he's been blaming me for it. And I just don't know what life holds for us. Christmas is not going to be very nice. It's just not nice. Awful, awful.
My goodness. I'm really sorry to hear that. Are you doing all right?
Yeah, I'm doing okay.
You got some support around you from other people?
No, I don't tell anybody else about it. My two children know about it, but that's it.
Let's get you a little bit of advice, if we can, from some of our guests who know about this. Owen, your first reaction to what you've just heard there.
Very, very difficult situation to be in. I suppose it is about getting the courage and asking for help. Mm. And for a lot of people, that's the most difficult first step to take. But there are services out there. Pat's already talked about some of them, and I would just, I suppose, encourage you to, you know, talk to your GP or talk to, you know, lift the phone and talk to some of these other services that are available. But certainly, you know, it's a tough place where you are at the minute.
And it's tougher if you're on your own. Let's be clear about that. You don't need to be on your own, Pat, you shouldn't be on your own.
And, you know, we did talk, and I think you had somebody on from Al-Anon yesterday. And Al-Anon is there, and I don't know if you gave out the telephone number yesterday or not.
But he's a very private person, and he would not go to help for anybody. And if I go for help for anybody, it feels like I'm betraying him.
Yes, but you have to. sorry, you have to look after yourself, you know what I mean? If you become down and you're not right, you can't look after him, you can't look after your children, you can't look after anybody. By you going along the Al-Anon, you can keep yourself right. And if you can keep yourself strong, then you might be able to get through it. But to try and do it on your own, you're going to torture yourself.
You can't do it. You can't do it. Can I give you the number right now?
I never was Santa Claus in my house. Never, ever. You know, my wife did everything. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm ashamed to say that, but that is where alcohol took me. Now, and there's a meeting on a Tuesday night in Ward 15, and my wife attended that for about 2 years after I came out of Ward 15. And, you know, she found it a great help. It's for relatives that is suffering with alcoholism in the house, you know.
Did you find it a struggle, as Hugh has been describing earlier, when you change the pattern, when you remove that alcohol problem, it affects everything else in terms of what you do in your life?
Yeah, I struggled big time. So I did, you know. And what got me through it was I would have did 8 meetings a week. 2 on a Sunday and 1 every night after that.
My goodness.
Or at least 12, 13 months, you know. And then I got a sponsor into my life and I started to get direction, you know. And it was only when I started to get direction and started to get things explained to me and showed to me, you know, where I was going wrong, you know, I could tell you horrific stories like everybody else, but it's a thinking disease. If you can get your thinking right, you know, there's no saying change your thinking and stop your drinking.
I can tell your wife's a very special person.
Oh, well, you know, and the family, without a doubt, you know, it was a joint effort, to be honest, you know. But the chance that they gave me is unbelievable. Yeah. After what I had done, you know, over 38 years, I'll never repay them back should I live to be 1,000, you know.
Have you got the Santa costume ready for Christmas?
But, you know, like, you know, 2 Christmases ago, it's the first time that I give my children a Christmas box.
That's amazing.
You know, and that's terrible.
Yeah.
You know, I seen me sitting with £200 in my pocket and my son asked me for money to go to a shop. I told him I hadn't got any.
Until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow.
Judy Garland, and some of your texts today into the programme are extraordinary. Hi, William. I have had a brother and 4 other relatives who died from alcohol abuse. That's just one family. Just one family. Can you please talk about the morning after? I'm not sure what dimension of the morning after you mean by that. You've been talking a little bit about the cure dimension and how your doctor spoke to you in the street. But is there a wake-up call sometimes in the morning after when you realise that's a blitz? I never want to drink again, but that lasts for about an hour.
I remember waking up in the mornings and there's that fear. You don't know what you've done, what you've said, and you know there's something wrong, but you don't know what's wrong, you know. And maybe walking down the stairs, and if the wife talks, tell you it's not too bad, but if there's no talk, you know you've done something.
Yeah. Brian says, my father had a drink problem and he used to say one drink was too many, a million was not enough. You know that phrase, don't you?
Yeah.
With all due respect to the lady who rang the police on her husband and then dropped the charges, she's only encouraging him. by dropping the charges, it's pointless. But you can understand the moral, the personal dilemma, the emotional dilemma that someone is in. She wants her old husband back. Yeah. She doesn't want him in jail. She wants him back. And that's the difficulty. I'm not going to judge anybody.
No.
You've obviously had a drink this morning already, haven't you?
Of course. I'm an alcoholic. That's
yeah.
what I do.
What time did you drink at?
As soon as I woke up, and that was 9 o'clock this morning. And that's what you've got to understand, that alcoholics, well, I can only speak personally, need to drink to function. And that means simplicities like washing your face, having a shower, or whatever, because your tremors are so bad.
Can you describe the tremors for me?
Your hands shaking, everything's disturbed in your mind, you can't think straight. So when I get a drink into me, I wait for about 20 minutes and then I can focus. And I'm not a down and out. I was a person with a career. I am a person with intelligence. I was brought up in a household where alcoholism was the answer. And my father was a brilliant man, but yet he succumbed to alcoholism. Later, my mother could not continue with the dread of him coming home. And at 42 years old, she took hold of drink. And that was her demise. She fell very, very quickly. The fallout from it affects different people in different ways. I became the alcoholic. I had siblings that could take a drink or leave it.
So what I'm hearing from you, and it's really interesting this, is the way in which alcohol within a family can become a generational problem. You pass it on sometimes by the experience of growing up in a house where there is alcoholism under the roof.
Alcohol was the solution.
Yeah.
It was the solution. I had very professional parents, but alcohol was their solution, you know. So what I'm trying to say is, the next time that you see a drunk lying on the street, don't pass by, but ask why. Why is that person? Because that person could be anyone in society, from judges down to journalists, down to any professional person. Who knows? Who asks? But they look at the behavior. This is my problem. Everybody looks at the behavior, and they don't look or ask why.
That's Aris. That's the name we're using for that regular listener to talk back, telling us her experience of drinking. And she's clearly drunk very early in the morning, before she has a shower, before she brushes her teeth, before she does anything else. She goes straight for drink. Not uncommon with an alcoholic.
No, but it was just, I picked up very strongly and stuff, and she says she's an alcoholic, and that's what alcoholics do, they drink. I'm an alcoholic and I don't take drink.
Right, but that's how an alcoholic who's not in recovery thinks.
But
she told her story very well, Pat.
Yes, she did tell her story very well, but the problem is, and I don't want to get into controversy, and she's become the victim. You know what I mean? In her story, she's the victim. If I'm the victim, poor me. Now, the reality of it is...
And that's a way in which you stay stuck in the problem.
Yes, but the reality of it is there's an answer to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does she want the answer?
The reason why I'm on your show today is because the 12th step of the AA program is to carry the message on to suffering alcoholics I know there's people sitting and listening to this program now, and they're denying that they're alcoholic. You know, I denied for a long time. So, in fact, about 5 years into my drinking career, I was all right with drink, and I socialized like any normal young fella would. But as I kept going on, it just got worse and worse and worse. And the basic thing with alcoholism is, I heard somebody saying there that it's a thinking disease. It definitely is a thinking disease. If your life is unmanageable to drink, and you cannot go out through life without taking a drink or having drink to sort out life's problems and live life in life's terms, there's a good chance you're alcoholic. You know, there's a very, very good chance. If you have an unmanageable life, you know. I found AA in 1998, you know, and I'm only sober 4 years. So there's the battle in itself that I had to drink. I could not stop. And the reason why I could not stop is because at the time I was sort of way, I wanted to stop. Another few years down the line, I really wanted to stop. And see, by the end of my drinking career, I desperately wanted to stop drinking. Desperately wanted to stop. Because what was happening in my life, things were becoming more and more hard to deal with. Hard to deal with. And the more I drank, the more I needed drink.
Well, can I ask you a question about that, Seamus? Because
yep.
A lot of people have been using this phrase, self-medicating.
About
the approach to alcohol. Yeah.
Yep.
Now, that suggests that you're using alcohol or abusing, misusing alcohol to treat something in your life, something that's not right in your life. Maybe it's an emotional thing. Maybe it's something deep in your family history, whatever it is.
Yes.
And what I've found when I've talked to recovering alcoholics over the years is I almost every time I'm talking to an incredibly self-reflective, insightful person. Because in order to get to that point, they had to not just deal with the booze, they had to deal with that thing they were trying to medicate with booze. Yep. And that has given them reflectiveness and insight into their own story, their family story, their friend's story. Have you found that? You talk to a recovering alcoholic and you'll not get a better conversation partner in terms of insight.
See, eventually when I faced the fears of taking on an AA program and getting a sponsor into my life, I knew the game was up. The time was up for me. The time in my life was to change and get honest with myself. 100% honesty, 100% willingness to have the psyche change and change the personality of being using alcohol to control your life and to change it all about and to change your lifestyle and to change your company, your cat. And all this is all part of the 12-step program. Steps 4 and 5 in the 12-step program, I released a lot of stuff that I'd held on to in my life. Through, as a young, shy, very shy young boy, very self-aware of myself, you know, and used drink. Drink helped me come out of that scenario I was in, you know, and I used drink to make myself to be somebody that I wasn't. I was perceiving myself to be somebody that I wasn't. I was pulling on the mask. I've heard it said so many times in an AA room, you know, and I was listening to that girl, Aris, and this is what has been drummed into me. You know, that girl Aris is sitting there, she's half cut on the radio today, and God bless her, God bless her wee soul, you know. She can't get through a day without taking a drink.
Julie is next. Hello, Julie. Not your real name, but it's Julie for us.
I am going at it from another side, in that I've personal and professional experience of seeing people come in. They've decided, let's say, if I do a timeline, 1st of January, I've had my fill, I want to stop drinking. They wait 3 or 4 days to get a doctor's appointment. They then could wait a minimum 14 days before they get to see a community addiction team specialist. They're given an hour of an assessment, such as the pressure. It could be another 6 weeks minimum before they get a review appointment, half-hour review appointment, and another 6 weeks. But what are those people having to do in those 6 weeks?
And I'll tell you what, Julie, that's exactly the question I wanted to ask our health minister. If you'd given us some time today.
As I say, I work at it. That's my job. And it feels really that we're sticking a sticking plaster over an artery, because that's what it is. And the blood is just continuing to seep out.